podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited. I want to welcome my new producer. I also want to start by thanking Evan Preston for all the work he did for me. Really appreciate it, E-Dog, and welcome Anya to The Maggie Dawn Show. Anya's going to be with me. Super cool always to have a woman in the production booth. So welcome, Anya. How are you doing today?
I'm good, but I don't think
you're muted, so I might not be able to hear. Maybe our listeners can hear you, and that's great, because if they can, you just say hi, everybody, and I'll keep it rolling on you saying hi, everybody. So thanks for being here, Anya. I really appreciate it, and thanks for everybody for listening. Boy, there's been a lot of news going on. So it was a bit of a pickle for me to try to figure out where to start. So I actually thought I would start a little bit lighthearted, or at least some things that I hope we all can collectively take a moment and observe together. If you want to join the show, of course, you can call or text us 844-967-2789. We are furiously working so that I can see your calls when you call in. Do not hesitate. We got a woman in the production box, a woman on the airwaves. Ladies, if you got political thoughts, I want to hear them. 844-967-2789. So the things that I wanted to start with were both fundraising items, which I think has some interesting resonance, the two fundraising items that I wanted to talk about. One is what is going on with presidential candidate Ron DeSantis out of Florida. News was breaking just over this past weekend. I think they tried to bury it a little bit. But Ron DeSantis apparently had some such northwards of 90 national campaign staffers for his presidential run, which is a lot this early. These folks, not cheap professionals. This is what they do for a living. And 90 is a lot of people to be running payroll on for your presidential campaign. And it turns out he's burned through a lot of money in just a couple of months. I heard estimates this morning of nearly $9 million. And so the news that was breaking is DeSantis has to and has effectively laid people off from his campaign. This is not what you would call a good look. Politics is all about projecting strength and vision and leadership. And laying off a whole bunch of people doesn't really, give the electorate the sense that that you are in an upswing, that you're in a positive, powerful trajectory, right? And DeSantis, and maybe you can take a look when we go to break, because I'd love some of the sound if we can find it. No big deal if not. But he finally has started attacking Trump very directly. Right. There was some interview over the weekend where DeSantis is saying the guy promised to build the wall. There's no wall. He promised to drain the swamp. The swamp's deeper than ever. And he just sort of ticks through a lot of the Trumpian talking points. And this is clearly reflective of the fact that the guy has no idea how to actually run an effective and efficient campaign from a fiscal perspective. Again, this is the guy that chose Twitter to announce his run for president, and it was just a tech debacle. Not a good look. Everywhere you turn, I mean, what is this guy going to run on? And DeSantis was actually saying this, you know, going to war with Mickey Mouse. Excuse me. That now Trump is having to criticize DeSantis back because they're finally coming to direct blows. But not a good look for DeSantis, and a lot of folks have been prognosticating that he might end up like that that Elmer Fuddian governor that we all once had when Mr. Scotty Walker, who was at one point in time a rising conservative star, in my opinion, basically because he did whatever the Koch brothers told him to do and took his legislative playbook right out of Alec's hands, and with a compliant, supplicant, gerrymandered to an authoritarian style, quote, democracy, democratic autocracy, he could just, you know, ride all of that into whatever legislative objectives he has. And that seemed, you know, going after public unions, right to work, stacking up legislative win after legislative win seemed to be a winning formula for Governor Walker. Yeah, well, he was out but early when he tried to take on Trump. And so we're seeing the same pattern now with DeSantis. Fascinating. So my question to y'all is, how long is he going to last in this race? Right? Like, how long is it the first debate if Trump doesn't show up? What are the factors? What do you think makes or breaks DeSantis? Because it seems to me he's been trying to run to the right of Donald Trump. I didn't know that there was actually any oxygen to the right of Donald Trump, but apparently there, in fact, is, especially on things like abortion. And I'm going to get to abortion today. But DeSantis passed the 6-week ban. I mean, I don't really know how you win a national election when polls show that Americans support healthcare freedom. Whatever form that, pick your issue that touches upon healthcare. And Americans prefer more choice, not less, more freedom, more affordability, not less. So DeSantis is against healthcare accessibility, 6 weeks abortion ban. Yeah, that's a good thing for Ron DeSantis. And he's fighting with Mickey Mouse. Okay. Despite the fact that they're trying to dress his wife up like she's Jackie Kennedy. I mean, hey, talk about window dressing. So that was fundraising hiccup number one that I wanted to take a pause and observe. So how long do you all think DeSantis is going to last? Like, how many months? What's the over-under on 6 months? Right? Is he still in this thing in 6 months? I mean, if he's got a burn rate of nearly $3 million a month, you got to be bringing in some pretty big donors. And what happens, of course, when you lay people off and your donor class is looking at your campaign like you might actually be weakening instead of growing in strength, those donor dollars, they just dry up. So I wish the governor, much like Wisconsin's former governor, a quick and speedy demise on the campaign trail. I think there are much better, more capable politicians out there to challenge Trump and to rhetorically engage with Trump. I mean, I haven't seen Ron DeSantis put together interesting verbal gymnastics ever. He likes to pick on reporters, which is easy to do. It's sort of like a talk radio show host when you can mute callers on you. And you're, oh, I disagree. I'll just mute them. You know, Ron DeSantis sniping at reporters does not a politician make. Ron DeSantis awkwardly avoiding individual one-on-one encounters with your voters does not a politician make. Running out of money in 3 months does not a presidential candidate make. So that was a fundraising catastrophe number one. Fundraising catastrophe number two, also bringing me a wee bit of joy on this Monday, is the downward trajectory that Lauren Boebert finds herself in. This I just am relishing. I would offer, and again, if you've got an idea about who might be a more inept, underprepared, ill-informed U.S. congressperson than Lauren Boebert, call me up and tell me who it is. Don't say MTG. I actually think she's a pretty good politician. Lots of message discipline. I think MTG actually might have some gray cells bopping around between the ears. Boebert, looking more questionable. I mean, introducing potential impeachment of Joe Biden before there's been a completed investigation, again, not what you would call politically savvy, particularly when your party leadership is telling you don't do that. So she has an announced contender, a candidate running against her in what will be the next congressional cycle. It's a guy by the name of Adam Frisch. So this is in Colorado. Adam Frisch lost by a mere 546 votes this last time. So with margins that close, if I was Mr. Frisch, I'd be hitting the fundraising juggernaut, see what I can rein in and then blast out onto the airwaves. So I want to give you the Q1 fundraising results, then I'm going to take a call, then I'm going to tell you the Q2 fundraising results. Q1 fundraising results, Adam Frisch, $1.7 million. We're in Boebert, $764,000. So Mr. Frisch nearly over doubling. Try not to do math on live radio, but yes, more than doubling Miss Boebert's Q1 campaign haul. Jack from Merrimack, good to see you again. What's on your mind, my friend? Is Lauren Boebert the lamest congressperson? How long will Ron DeSantis last in the presidential race?
Well, first of all,
Jack, are you there? It's me, Margaret.
Can you hear me?
We're going to see if we can get Jack back. Or can you hear him, Anya, and I can't? Anya can hear him, but I cannot. So we're just good. If Jack, you're still there, you give your piece. Anya's going to point at me when you're done. Jack, go ahead now, friend.
Okay. Well, first of all, Boebert for idiot Congress people has got some competition. A guy by the name of Tuberville, I think it is. None of these Republican presidential candidates.
I agree. Boebert is an idiot. Oh, Tommy Tuberville, indeedy.
None of these presidential candidates is anything like a conservative that I would ever consider a conservative. These guys are all crazies. Not one of them.
I love it, Jack from Merrimack. Always good to hear from you. Yeah, these candidates stink. I would say they stink really bad. Again, I think the question is over under 6 months. Is he even going to make it 6 months with DeSantis? So we're coming up on a break. We're going to take a little pause. And I'm going to talk about a couple of other interesting little juicy tidbits happening in the news just today. When we come back, I am Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. Keep it locked in. I got more bombs to drop, interesting tidbits, and all sorts of salacious news for you to dig your teeth into. Thanks for listening, folks. Join us, 844.
This summer, Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX has a new starting lineup. 12:15, Town Call. 1 p.m., The Todd Alba Show on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
At the beginning of something. I don't expect you to know where it's gonna go.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn, and this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. Don't forget to download that app, available from any of your favorite app stores. Just type in Civic Media, download that puppy, and we will always be here right at your fingertips. And so easy to join the show. You just one click it on the app. Gets you right linked in, 844-967-2789. You can, of course, do it the old-fashioned way. So talking about two Republicans struggling a bit on the fundraising front, DeSantis sloughing off some of his bloated presidential campaign staff, not looking like a paragon of strength. I hope he's gone in another 3 months. If you're burning $3 million a month, whew. That money goes fast. The other one, of course, is Lauren Boebert. She's getting her butt kicked in the fundraising department by her previous challenger, who lost by only 546 votes, a guy by the name of Adam Frisch. He more than doubled her fundraising total for Q1 this year. Q2's report just became public. Thought I'd share that with you because, ouch, this one's even worse. Boebert raised $818,000. Frisch more than doubled, nearly tripling coming in at 2.6. No, that's over tripling. Gosh, I need to stop doing math on the air. It's always a pitfall. More than tripling at 2.6 million. That is really shaping up to be quite a race. And here's what. When asked about this fundraising discrepancy, the Boebert office and campaign responded with some mealy-mouthed nonsense about forwarding the interests of Coloradans, blah, blah, blah. And when the reporter followed up and asked, can you name some of your big legislative wins since joining the U.S. Congress? She didn't really name anything except getting, I believe it was a clean water bill out of committee. Ouch. Not really what I would call winning. Literally nothing to show for it. You're just engaging in culture wars and you're getting butt kicked. You're butt kicked in fundraising. Yeah, not a recipe for success. May they all go down in flames, says I. Yeah. So that was kind of brightened my Monday morning, I have to say. But then one of the dark clouds that I had to get done with was the fact that everybody's favorite senator that gets in the way of things like, you know, voting rights, tax reform, immigration policy, healthcare access, you know, all those things, Joe Manchin, that guy. Yet today, apparently, he showed up as one of the keynote speakers at this, like, no labels, third party alternative convention thing today, I think in New Hampshire. This is what I talk about, performative politics all the time, right? Yes, politics is theater. Please don't call me up and talk to me about that. When I say performative politics, I mean politicians that are engaging in self-congratulatory, self-promotional, power consolidating garbage that has nothing to actually do with outcomes. That could not define Joe Manchin more perfectly. He just likes being the center of attention. He's creating leverage for himself. I don't know how the guy can call himself a Democrat anymore. He's the party of Joe Manchin. No labels. You know, he's got a label. It's like, I believe in Joe Manchin. Dick Durbin had a super funny quote today. He said, Joe is America's biggest political tease. Yes, I think that would be another way, Senator Dick Durbin, of expressing what I call performative politics, right? It's only about him. It's about raising his profile and creating more power leverage for himself. It's not about the issues. He likes to say it is. He likes to talk about common sense policy that serve middle class Americans. I have news for you, Joe Manchin. Common sense policies that serve middle class working families. Yeah, that guy's called Joe Biden, not Joe Manchin. We have that candidate. Now, we can talk about the fact that Biden doesn't poll all that well, but it is ludicrous for Manchin to try to take Biden on his actual policy record. It makes no freaking sense. Zero. This is a complete, again, self-congratulatory exercise in vanity for Joe Manchin and for those who are promoting the No Labels Party. Let me tell you, you run any third-party candidate, you put votes and you tip the tide to Donald Trump. You take votes off the table for Joe Biden and you tip the scales in Donald Trump's favor, because there is absolutely no possible way. They cannot show us a single poll, cannot show us a single analysis that shows us how the No Labels Party ever gets to 270 electoral votes. So what is it about? If you have a theory about why the No Labels Party exists, call me, 844-967-2789. They can't articulate any formative policy ideas that are measurably different than what Joe Biden's administration is trying to put forward. It is distractionary garbage, and shame on you, Joe Manchin, for indulging in it, indulging in this flight of fantasy and vanity, sir. It's an embarrassment. Do you really care so little about your working families that have supported you, sir, that you are willing to risk another presidential administration from Donald J. Trump? Because that is what you are saying to the American public. Shame on you. We've got one more good Trump
media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
I'll smile, I know what it takes to fool this town. I'll do it till the sun goes down and all through the night time. Oh yeah, oh yeah, I'll tell you what you wanna hear. Get my sunglasses on while I shed it.
Welcome back. I am Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. You are welcome to join our conversation, 844-967-2789. I would be remiss if I didn't give my good friend Mark a shot at the two questions of the last half hour. How long does Ron DeSantis last in the presidential race? What's your over-under? And I forgot what the other question was. but let's start with Mark from the SAC. How long do you think Ron DeSantis lasts in this race before he's out?
Well, maybe as long as Scotty Wanker lasted in his race, because the way Scotty Wanker burned through money, it was kind of ridiculous. That, and maybe DeSantis will do the same thing, and maybe he'll, the scales will drop off people's eyes down in Florida and see him for the fraudster that he is. That it is just ridiculous, you know, the amount of lies the guy can tell. And it is, but before I get, I mean, you were asking who would give Lauren Boebert a run for her money. Maybe a Representative Paulina Luna from Florida as well. Looks like she's another one who takes some kind of liberties with her biography. And you'd think if she had a biography kind of like she claims to have, that, or probably does have in some ways, that she would have a little bit more compassion for others than it seems that she does. Some of the lunatic things that she's come up with. I mean, maybe Luna is a appropriate name for her, because back in the old days, sailors just think you'd go insane if you slept in the moonlight. That did we get cut off? Or hello?
Thanks, Mark. I always appreciate hearing your thoughts here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You too can join us, 844-967-2789. The other little bit of news that I wanted to hit before taking a little bit deeper dive on something that touches upon abortion and what I think is an innate human right to affordable and self-determined health care. And that was this bit. John Kelly, apparently somebody needs to keep their voice memo on record every time John Kelly starts talking. And I think what's really powerful about what John Kelly has to say about Donald Trump is that the man worked literally hip to hip with this man. John Kelly is a no-nonsense kind of fella and is not a liberal, not a progressive, not a Democrat. By any stretch, any sort of evaluative measure, this is not a liberal. This is someone who is as traditionally conservative as you could possibly get, and yet has this up-close and personal knowledge of how Donald Trump operates. Over the weekend, he was asked what he thought about a potential second term from Donald J. Trump would look like, and he had one word for it: chaotic. This is John Kelly. It would simply be chaotic, because he'd continually be trying to exceed his authority, but the sycophants would go along with it. It would be a nonstop gunfight with the Congress and the courts. this is what is, he's pointing to what really has me scared. If John Kelly thinks Trump was scared blankless by his federal indictment, I think the entirety of thinking Americans who care about working families should also be scared blankless by the prospect of Donald Trump winning in 2024. And here's why. There are a few reasons. The first and most notable would be the fact that Trump has learned from his mistakes in his first administration. Secondly, he knows how to work the levers of the administrative state. The powers conferred upon the presidency to execute upon the laws are quite broad and subject to interpretation. He knows how to use those things. He also knows how to ordinary pledges of loyalty from those around him. And finally, he also knows how to enact or use what are, frankly, like acting folks in different cabinet positions, in different appointment roles. So instead of actually appointing someone, you just let acting people take over. And that could be incredibly problematic. Towards the end of his term, Trump was actively pushing out U.S. attorneys who basically wouldn't do his bidding to basically bring the entire arm of the federal government, of federal law enforcement power, down on Trump's enemies. Those U.S. attorneys that objected to that, he ushered them out the door. And there's just a long list of those U.S. attorneys. These are the things that really, really scare me, should scare all of us, coupled with the fact that what self-respecting conservative with some gray matter between their ears would agree to now serve in Donald Trump's cabinet or in any appointed position? You know that the man is entirely unmoored. So this whole sort of garbage exercise that we heard from so many on the right during his first term, which was, deep throat circa 2021, right? The guy that wrote the piece that said, we all serve in his administration because we're so afraid of what'll happen if we're not here. Those people aren't showing up. They're not going to show up if he wins in 24. You'll have, exactly as John Kelly described, sycophants, numerous in number, willing to trade integrity and principles away to stay in the good graces of one Donald J. Trump. That is not how government is supposed to run. Yes, there are political loyalties that are in any administration. Yes, presidents generally appoint folks that are politically aligned with them, that come from their side of the playing field. But there is still an expectation that when these officers of the government swear an oath to the Constitution, there's a presumption that they actually mean it. I have zero confidence that a single person who would accept an appointment under a second term 2024 elected Donald J. Trump would mean a word of what they say when they swear an oath to the Constitution. That is the chaos that John Kelly is referring to. Again, it would be a nonstop gunfight with the Congress and the courts. What does he mean by that? He's describing the other two branches of government. And he's saying Donald J. Trump has no understanding, no respect for anything that looks even remotely like the balance of powers, the separation of powers in these three branches of government. I also want to just remind us of some of the other things that former Chief of Staff John Kelly has also said about Donald Trump. The depths of his dishonesty are just astounding to me. The dishonesty, the transactional nature of every relationship, it's more pathetic than anything else. He is the most flawed person I have ever met in my life. He does not try to unite the American people. He doesn't even pretend to try. I think we really need to step back. I think we need to look harder at who we elect. What is their character like? What are their ethics? He continued. Are they willing, if they are elected, to represent all of their constituents, not just the base, but all of their constituents, and then look at the politics? This is what I think, I hope, I've been trying to talk about since I came back on the air. And that is the performative politicians, those that elevate themselves over their constituents, over their oaths, whether they come from the right or the left, should never be permitted to hold office. No matter what our political beliefs, no matter what side of the aisle we may find ourselves on, when we find those that elevate self above service, we should usher them to the door or never let them get there in the first place. My friend Larry is on hold. Larry, welcome to Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, my friend?
This is Jean from Eau Claire. Hello, Maggie.
Looks like I lost Larry. And it wasn't Larry. It was someone else. See, this is the joy of doing live radio. We will persevere through any technical problem. And listen, we're not announcing a presidential campaign. We're just trying to talk about presidential politics. That's what we're doing here. Patience, my friends. We will get there. That is the core of the issue. And so today I'm going to bring it back down to the local level because Milwaukee County is still deciding whether or not it wants to put in place a 0.4% sales tax. And this is quite a challenge, quite a challenging vote for many county supervisors, as it was for many of the city council members. But here is where the rubber must meet the road. I would offer that when politicians are faced with tough votes, it will show you in that vote exactly where they fall. Are they a performative politician who will use that moment to elevate themselves over service? To set aside what are clear needs or the facts of an argument, to make rhetorically interesting, sometimes rhetorically and practically very important arguments, but arguments that are in that moment, in that single vote, entirely beside the point. And so I will say again this afternoon, what I've said before on this show about the sales tax. Are sales tax regressive? Yes. It's a flat tax. It treats everybody the same no matter what your income level is. Therefore, it is regressive. Is this where we should be? Of course not. If we had an actual minimum wage that paid people for a fair day's work fairly, and by fairly, here's what I mean, enough to support a family working 40 hours of full-time work. If we had an actual minimum wage, if we had reasonably priced health care, if we had a tax system that worked for the middle class, we wouldn't have to have a debate this difficult about a sales tax. It is because the system doesn't work for the middle class, for working Wisconsinites, for working Americans anywhere. It's because the tax system and the way that we compensate labor in this country, it's for those reasons that this is a difficult vote. But I offer you this, to argue that the sales tax will be the straw that breaks the camel's back is performative and performative only. It is the equivalent of a stage 4 cancer patient complaining about an acne outbreak. It is entirely beside the point. If people were compensated fairly for their labor, if the tax system worked to the benefit of the middle class instead of the ultra-wealthy donor class and corporations, this would not even be a close vote. Wouldn't even be difficult. But here we are. So I encourage all of us to hope that our elected officials always put service before self. When we come back, I'll have more for you on The Maggie Dawn Show.
73 degrees.
This summer, Mad Radio 92.7 WMBX has a new starting lineup. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom and Cruz. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show on Mad Radio 92.7 WMBX.
Back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join the conversation, 844-967-2789. What's got you worried most about Trump 2024? To me, it seems, you know, you got DeSantis, you got Trump, and maybe Pence. Tim Scott seems to have some momentum. Nikki Haley, I don't think a female ever, well, maybe not ever, but in my lifetime, won't get the nod as the Republican presidential nominee. I just don't think that happens. So I've talked about DeSantis. I've talked about Trump. So let me talk about Pence now. And I promised you I'd talk about abortion. So here we go. In an interview with the Associated Press just before we went into the weekend, Mike Pence said this. Basically, he thinks abortion should be banned even when a pregnancy isn't viable. I'm going to repeat that. Mike Pence, presidential candidate, former vice president, thinks that abortion should be illegal even when a pregnancy is not viable. Most often, this places the mother at extraordinary physical and mental health risk. It is a position so extreme that it can only be explained by religious belief. I want to say that again. Mike Pence, who's also said, I want to get this right, in 2010, he was speaking to an Indiana anti-abortion group, and he said this, that abortion should never be legal. He later tried to walk that back and say it should only be legal in case of a threat to the life of the mother. But just days ago, presidential candidate Mike Pence said that women should be forced to carry pregnancies to term, even when the fetus will never live. That is a position that I offer you can only be explained by religion. And last week, we spent a good amount of time talking about religion in public schools. And we see again and again now, I would argue, rationales coming from the Supreme Court and other federal jurists that can only be explained if those jurists, if those judges, again, neglect their oath to the Constitution and allow their religious and faith beliefs to guide their decisions that are supposed to be for a secular democracy. And we know this is happening because it is right out there in public. Just last week, following the 303 creative decision, where the Supreme Court, after saying that everyone must be treated equal, said except for the gays, a Texas judge has said that because of her religious beliefs, she's not going to perform any gay marriages anymore. And she is citing the 303 creative decision. We had another Texas judge who ruled and did it for the entire nation, at least he tried to, that mifepristone did not have sufficient scientific background to permit it to still be appropriately prescribed to women in this country. This is religion in our courts. This is religion in a presidential candidate. I realize that for almost the entirety of our nation, presidential candidates and officials running for elected offices have talked about their faith backgrounds. But I believe that the idea was to actually keep religion out of our government. I freaked out about this Oklahoma know-nothing superintendent because the guy got on the news, got in an interview with a camera rolling and said the Bible should be taught in public schools. Mike Pence says, forget it. A woman should be forced to carry a pregnancy to term even if the fetus will never live. Texas judges using their religion as an excuse not to follow Supreme Court precedent. Didn't this woman get sworn in? Where is the Texas bar? And it's not the same thing as a cake baker not being forced to bake a cake. It's not the same thing as a website designer claiming falsely that she might maybe be asked by this guy that never really asked her to make a website for a gay wedding. This is a public official, an arbiter of the law, who has sworn publicly to uphold not just the Texas, but the U.S. Constitution. And our Supreme Court, at least just to, you know, up until today, has said that gay marriage is legal and you can't deny people this right. But she says, no thanks, I'll just opt out of that. What happens if all of us that work in government just opt out of doing things that we claim violate our sense of religiosity or whatever our claimed faith is? My faith is no jerks, no dummies. What if I say that I just won't do my job for anybody that does believe in God? Right? What if government officials, like, well, I'm so fervently atheistic that I can't deign to perform a wedding ceremony for someone who believes in God? I mean, like, this is what's dangerous here. When religion infects government, you have nothing but relativism. Because you can invent a religion tomorrow. It's called Scientology. This is the core of the problem. We have forgotten that religion belongs in mosques, in temples, in churches, but not in our state houses and not in our courtrooms, not in our public schools. It's really that simple. When we come back tomorrow, I'm going to dig a little deeper into what's going on in the judiciary. Thanks for tuning in and bearing with us. I'm Maggie Dawn. This has been the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'll see you tomorrow, y'all.